Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back for a brand new edition of Collider Ladies Night. I am very, very excited to welcome Abigail Cowan to the show because Fate the Wing Saga, it is like a highly addictive binge watch. I didn't watch the first season when it first came out, but it was recommended to me. And man, I blew through seasons 1 and 2 disturbingly fast.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right, so you have not been warned. The first order of business on Collider Ladies Night is playing dicey questions with the dice tower behind me. I've got 8 questions here. You get 3 rolls on the tower, and whatever questions I land on for you, that's where we start at least.
Okay.
All right. We are kicking this off with a number 4. You got an easy one to start here. This one is binge watch. What is the most recent TV show that you have binge watched?
Breaking Bad. I had never seen it. So it was on my list of things to see, and it did not disappoint. So I've been binge watching that right now.
So is it on to Better Call Saul next?
I guess. I mean, if that's recommended, then heck yeah, because I love the content. It's so cool.
Better Call Saul just like cleaned up with Emmy nomination. So it could be a perfect time to jump in.
Yeah, exactly. Got to finish Breaking Bad first, but then that one's right. Next. Yeah.
All right. I got your second roll on the tower here. We are moving over to a number 2. So number 2 is called High Low. Can you give us one audition high, but then also one audition low and tell us what you learned from that low?
Oh, geez. There's so many lows in this world of acting and auditioning. See, an audition high, I mean, probably the ones that I've booked. So I would say I guess it could be a high and a low, because for Fate, actually, I mean, that's, of course, a high because I, you know, got the wonderful call that I booked the role. But then that also, walking out of there, felt like a low the first time, because I was on my way to the airport and my car had broken down. So I literally had to go right from the audition, my first audition for it, right to the airport. And I was going to be gone for like a few months, and I have a problem with overpacking in the first place. So I had this like suitcase about the size of me, and I had to lug it into the casting office, and it was just such a scene, and everyone was like so quiet, and I was like bah, 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 into the office, and it was quite the scene. And then also, no pun intended, but also in the first episode of season 1, Bloom is arriving to the school with the suitcase. So I also then later I was like, oh my gosh, they think that I was like either a method actor or like totally trying to like be in the role, showing up to this audition room with a suitcase. So that would be a low as well. That was quite embarrassing, but got called back. So
as someone who is currently beating herself up over overpacking for TIFF, I 100% understand all of this. It makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah. Overpacking is a issue.
Wait, I'll follow up on that and ask a fun question about that. So you're overpacking. What is something that you absolutely must take with you wherever you go that someone else out there would be like, why are you even wasting space in your suitcase for that? But you need it. It's important to you.
Oh, God. I could lie right now, but I'm not going to. In the sake of not embarrassing myself, but I would say my special blanket.
I love
Can't
that.
Sleep moment. Without it. This girl still has a blankie. I'll tell you.
I was just having a conversation. It's something about taking things from home with you. I was just having a conversation with someone else who packs candles and photos of friends and family to go wherever they need to go. And it's because when you're traveling as much as you guys do, it's not easy.
Yeah. No, it's, yeah. But I never thought about the photo thing. The candle thing, I would be afraid of it breaking in my suitcase because that's usually my luck. But smart. I mean, I love candles. Interesting. Yeah,
I just got it. My first
air tag. Idea.
Well, good luck adding to the already overpacked suitcase.
Yeah, literally.
All right. I got one more roll in the tower for you.
All right. This is fun.
Can't do a number two again. Or a number four again. All right. We are wrapping this up with a number one. This is a fun. This has become my favorite question to ask. This is zombie apocalypse team up. So there is a zombie outbreak on the set of the Winx Saga, and you have to select two cast members from the show, not their characters, the real people to team up with. Who do you pick that would give you the best chance of surviving?
Two
of them.
I would probably say... I'd say Precious for one, because she's insanely calming and I am the polar opposite. Like if something goes wrong, I'm like, everybody panic. And so I think she would keep the group calm and come up with rational, logical solutions. And then I would maybe choose, it would be between Elliot and Alicia, but I would maybe say, because they're both everyone is intelligent, but they're both like quite intellectuals. So I'm going to say Alicia, because she worked in science before, or she worked in lab work or something. So she could kind of know how to maybe come up with a cure, or like if someone were to get bitten or whatever, could crack the code of the zombie apocalypse.
I really appreciate the reasoning behind that. I feel like I often hear like, I want the biggest, strongest person or the first.
Nah.
You're a runner though. You can run.
Yeah, I'll do the running. And then, yeah, I think I always think with that kind of stuff, people do want the big and the strong, but like, I think we need brains and I think we need problem solving. And then
it's very true.
Yeah.
I do have to say, it is so refreshing to see someone running in a TV show who legit can run. There's just been so many times where I'm like, you don't ever run in your free time, but I could totally tell. And then I was doing my like little Wikipedia reading and I saw that you did track and field. I'm like, this totally makes sense.
That's so funny. Well, thank you. That's a compliment, because when I rewatched it, I was like, oh my gosh, I thought I could run. And I look like I'm like running with my hands like this for some reason at one point. I was like, what is going on? So thank you.
No, you look legit. I was very impressed by that. All right, let's get into the meat of our conversation now. Every single Collider Ladies Night conversation starts here. What was the movie, the performance you saw or personal experience you had, you name it, that first made you say to yourself, I have to be an actor and nothing else?
You know, it's interesting. I get asked that a lot. And I lately, like, I've never really like known the answer. And like, cause a lot of people have that one thing. They're like, I saw this and I knew. It's weird for me because I grew up kind of in the middle of nowhere and we were just always outside playing. And so didn't really watch a lot of movies. Still did. Like every Friday night we would go to Blockbuster. And I don't know. Do you remember Blockbuster?
Of course I remember Blockbuster.
But and we'd get a movie, but I would always get kind of the, like, I don't know, cheesy kids movies, stuff like that at that time, because that's when it, when Blockbuster was around for me. But I would say, I mean, I grew up loving film and loving, you know, loving TV, but nothing like, I don't want to say tasteful, but it was just more, you know, a kid watching movies and TV. So I would say more it came from being outside and playing and creating, like, different stories and having absolutely nothing else to do but that, because my brother and I didn't, we didn't really have, like, it wasn't like a normal neighborhood where we grew up. It was each, like, we grew up on land, so we didn't really have neighbors nearby. We didn't really know our neighbors. So coming from that, I think, and also playing Barbies by myself, realizing, like, wait, I could, like, I literally would get so into the Barbies. Like, I would, like, create tears and be like, in this story, it sounds so pathetic, but literally playing by myself. And I was like, wait, I could do this for a career. Like, this is so cool. So I would say that it comes from falling in love with imagination, I think.
I can understand that. So then taking that to kind of the next phase, do you remember the first time where you were able, like, you knew you wanted to be an actor, but do you remember the first time that you felt like you were really good at it? Like, you were doing it, whether it was in some sort of program when you were younger or maybe on a professional set, and you said to yourself, like, you know what? Like, I have what it takes and I believe in my ability to go to the distance in this business.
If I'm being honest, I mean, I still don't feel like that. Like, I think it's like a big, I know everyone talks about imposter syndrome. It's, you know, a big part of that. And then also, I don't know, I've talked to a lot of other artists and they're just like, you're so self-critical and you're so, a lot of us are insanely insecure in our craft too. And I don't know if, I hope I get to that point of being like, wow, I'm great. But like, I don't think it still hasn't really been a moment where I'm like, I know for a fact I'm going to be able to do this for the rest of my life, because it is such an up and down industry and you genuinely never know. And it's, yeah, I don't know if I really ever fully felt that. I think when I was on, I do remember the feeling of like, I need to really pursue my dreams, was when I was on the set of Stranger Things. I had a really tiny little role with a couple lines, and I was driving, I think, back from a fitting, and I remember just like having this overwhelming feeling of like, I need to, because I was living in Florida at the time, I was like, I need to do this for the rest of my life. Like, I need to at least try, or I won't, you know, die happy. Like, I need to know that I tried. So I think that was a big pivotal moment for me. But I don't think I've ever really felt the like, wow, I'm good. You know, it's a weird industry. Weird.
I always feel like such a jerk asking that question, because I'm like a perfectionist who is super hard on herself. So if someone asked that question my way, I would have given the same exact answer that you just did.
It's so funny because I feel like so many artists feel like that, like so many, or people just in this industry in general feel like, you know, it's just a very, I guess, self-critical. It allows for a lot of like self-awareness and self-criticism or critique, and can make it kind of difficult.
Filling out the roadmap here. You just brought up Stranger Things. So did you do Stranger Things before you officially made the move to LA? Were you still studying in school when you did that show?
I was. I won't lie, I didn't really want to go to school at all. I was like, when I was in the small town that I was in, I was like, I don't know how I could ever really do this for a career. It doesn't make sense. So I, you know, got into a decent school and I was like, I'll do it. But it was still fully on my heart, and acting was. And I actually booked Stranger Things out of my college dorm room. My brother helped me tape, and it was like a few lines I had to do. And then I found out I got it. And luckily was doing online classes, so I was able to kind of continue. But I drove up to Atlanta where they shoot and met a girl out there who I actually was on the set with. And we were like, rash decision. We're like, should we just move to LA? And she was like, yeah, I'm down. So then we ended up rooming together for a couple years, and that was the move. But yes, I was in Florida.
I mean, sometimes you just got to do the rip the band-aid off type of way of moving to LA. Otherwise you'll never do it.
Yeah, and that was kind of my my mindset about it. I was like, if I don't do it now, I'm going to graduate from school. I'm going to get into that mindset. I'm going to go, you know, into a corporate job and, you know, probably love it, but always have it in the back of my mind of like, I really want to do acting. But I won't, I'll definitely say it wasn't easy coming out here. We were sleeping on mattresses on a floor, sharing a room with no air conditioning in North Hollywood. And it was it's been a journey. I'll tell you that.
My watch currently says it's 102 degrees in the valley right now. So as you just explained that, like, my heart sank for you.
Oh my God, it was so bad. My roommate and I, we would literally be like, we would be sitting like literally on our mattresses on the floor, like sweating. And we'd be like, okay, we need to, but we couldn't really afford a lot of gas, like, or we didn't have a lot of money for gas money. So we had to save that, but we would still go downstairs, sit in the car with air conditioning for a bit and like cool off and be like, okay, we're good. We could go back in the apartment. It was not fun.
Okay. So when you got out to LA, what did you at the time think was the first right step to becoming an actor? And now looking back, would you recommend that as a first step to somebody else who's first moving out here?
I mean, first step is, I think, always, you know, get an agent. And, you know, I felt very fortunate because I had already had my agent out here. So I was able to kind of just get into the swing of things and get to auditioning. So I would say that's really the first step is kind of have a game plan, because I think that I've seen it so many times and it's hard because you're managing your own schedule. Having a game plan of how you want to do it, what your next steps are. And I think also treating auditioning as a full-time job. And that's kind of what I did. I was like, I'm going to treat this like it's my 9 to 5, and if I'm not at an audition, I'm going to be home studying for the next one. And when it hits 5 o'clock, I'm good, but I will put as much work as I can, in the process, and also learning to love auditioning, because it's never, a lot of people hate it, but I think if you convince yourself, it's the same thing for me as like running. I'm like, deep down, do I like it? No. Do I convince myself and tell myself I love it? Yes. So I think the learning to love auditioning and making it like a fun process makes it a lot easier, I would say.
When you moved out to LA, what was the first thing that you did book after committing to treating auditioning like a 9 to 5 job?
I booked a pilot called Wisdom of the Crowd. And was that before? Yeah, that was the first thing I booked. And which was like super exciting. And then it got picked up, but then mid-season got canceled. So again, just the nature of the industry, you never know. But yeah, I think that was the first thing I booked.
So something like that happens. I always love asking about bumps in the road. And I imagine early on that kind of experience can rock you a little. So what was the key to, you know, looking at that kind of situation, knowing that you had nothing to do with that ultimate decision for the show to get canceled, and then, you know, being able to forge forward with some confidence in yourself?
Yeah, you know, it's weird because that's, again, it's the nature of the industry. So you have to have really thick skin. I have learned, do not get married to anything in the process of one auditioning, in the process of filming, in the process of it being done, and once it's out. Then you can kind of like have your little celebration, but like, you know, reviews are going to be, could be not so great, or, you know, the project may not do so well. So it's like a weird, I just like don't let myself, and it's probably very, I'm like, people are probably like, go to therapy. But like, I don't let myself get excited it used to be until I'm on set. And then even after that, you know, because the show, it got canceled. And then I was like, okay, so I can't wait, or I can't just like not get excited until I'm on set. I need to wait until the whole thing is released. And then even then, you know, if it doesn't do well, you're not having your hopes up and your worth isn't in that one project. And I think that's the number one thing to do. So basically just never get excited.
As someone who kind of like literally cherishes every single opportunity that comes her way, I can't even imagine having to be in that kind of mind frame when you tackle a project. But the way you lay it out is kind of necessary in such a volatile business like this.
Right? I mean, it sounds so pessimistic and such a like horrible way to live, but it's like a protection. I mean, I'm the same way. I'm like, I can't even believe that I even get to do this for like a living because, you know, where I came from, and it just doesn't seem realistic to even be able to do it in a for a career. But so yeah, every single thing that comes my way, I'm like, oh my god, this is like amazing. But I have to, yeah, it's like a self-defense, protect yourself, because you never know what's gonna happen or come from it. So it's and if it does, you know, do well, it's like Christmas Day and it's the greatest thing in the world. And then you can be excited.
Exactly. That's why you got to go that route. And also, I feel like when you stress about something, it means you really care about it. And I feel like no one's going to have longevity in this business unless they care that deeply about the art that they're making.
So true. It's so true. So it's a fine line of like finding that balance, like knowing that also, you know, caring this deeply, you're going to go through a ton of heartbreak, more than, you know, not more than most, but it's going to be a wild ride. I always say it's like high highs and low lows. It's never just like smooth sailing. Like it's because the highs are so high and you're like, wow, this is a dream come true. And then the lows are so low because it's literally your heart on your sleeve and your everything, because this, you know, my job is everything to me. So it's a weird thing to balance. Yeah.
Oh, I very much understand that. And you power through the low lows so you get to the high highs. And one of the ones that I want to bring up before we jump into Wings Fall Force is Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which I absolutely adored. But specifically with that one, I was wondering if you took anything from Kiernan as the lead of that show, not just in terms of her being, you know, the lead character, but more so how she carries herself as number one on the call sheet, because oftentimes the number one on a call sheet can really set the tone in an environment like that. So was there anything she did on that set that made a big impression on you that you find yourself using on Wing Saga?
Yeah. I'm like, I just decided to play it just like Sabrina. I'm like, I'm playing Sabrina. No, I 100%. I mean, I said this in an interview the other day too, just not even being asked about it, because I genuinely feel this way. She was so organized, so just like, I never saw her complain once or have a negative outlook on anything. And that did genuinely set a tone for everyone else. And it was just like how can we ever be like, oh, I'm tired, it's been a rough day. Well, one, how could we? We have our dream job and it's the most, I mean, beautiful thing in the world to be able to do it. And two, how could we, when, you know, Kiernan is working day in, day out, comes to set prepared, never misses a line, is always there on time. It set a standard for us as well. We're like, we work like 2 days a week. We can't like mess up here, because if she's doing that, then... So it definitely was very inspirational, and I learned a ton, and definitely learned in that moment, like in that time of filming, that I would have not been able to do that, what she did. And it's funny, because I actually originally auditioned for Sabrina, and am so happy that, you know, I had never been a number one ever, and I had no idea what it entailed. And being able to go through that and, you know, watch how she handled it all was just a humongous learning experience. And I don't think I could have at all. I mean, she was just the perfect Sabrina and the perfect number one. And yeah, I mean, everyone still talks about it. They're like, it was just crazy how hard of a worker she was. She was like 18. I was like, how is this like possible, but it is, yeah.
Yeah, when I was that age, I can't imagine carrying myself with such professionalism. So it really does blow my mind when I hear about young actors just carrying themselves in such a manner on a show. It's so impressive. And that paves the way to Wings quite nicely. So even with her setting an example, and even with having had the experience of being on the sets of two other major Netflix series, what is something about the way that Wink Saga was shot in season one that all the experience in the world could never have prepared you for? Something that really caught you by surprise when you got into it?
I was prepared because of watching how Kiernan did it and the way that she valued her sleep and valued her eating and valued her everything. It was like, you need to be healthy. You need to, like, because it creates energy. That, again, I'm so happy I learned, because if I hadn't done that, that would have been a very big issue. But I mean, no one can prepare you, especially a Florida girl, for the cold weather. So I think that's what it was. That would be like the number one. But it was like, I like have seen snow like twice in my life. And then there was no snow, rainy and cold. And it was supposed to look like we were in like summertime. So I was in like, you know, maybe like a light jacket or like short sleeves, and freezing cold in the winter with rain. So that was definitely and then trying to get your lines out too, where your like teeth are like chattering. You're like trying to have a real scene. It's like, that was interesting, but yeah, got used to that real quick. So
I am a big old baby in the cold. So that answer speaks to me a little too much. Another part of the process of making a show that really fascinates me is, I don't even know if you did this. Maybe I should ask you if you did this first. Was it the kind of situation where you shoot the first episode and then you go on hiatus for a little bit, like a pilot episode?
No, we just went right through. We started and we just didn't stop. So it was, it was a pretty heavy schedule season one. Season two was a bit less like of a heavy schedule. It was kind of, you know, we're focusing on more of other characters and their storylines as well. So kind of, I think gave a little breather for all of us, but it was every single day for me. And I honestly learned, like, I would prefer that over having time off any day. Like, I love being in a routine and I love having, you know, something to also hold me accountable, because in your off time, you're like, hey, what do I do with my day now? Like, got my audition done, now what? So I honestly would prefer the day in, day out over like having a couple of days off for, you know, I say that now and then I'm going to, next time I'm in it, I'm going to be like, why did I say that?
You're speaking to me too much right now. I'm go, go, go nonstop. That's the better way to work any day, for me at least. Let's get into some of the cast here. So of this entire incredible ensemble, of all of the actors you get to work with, who would you say has the most polar opposite ways of attacking their material and the process that they use, where when you're these two people, when you're their scene partner, you know that you on set are going to get an entirely different acting experience?
It's interesting because I feel like we all kind of do the same in a way. I would say I more so in like when it's like a pretty serious like scene, I will kind of be in it and I can still like have a conversation and like whatever and like kind of like laugh here and there, but I'm more like focused on like, okay, where do I, like, very, very meticulous. And okay, maybe in that case, I'm very meticulous and I like want to do, I'm all, and it's a bad habit, I need to like get out of that, but like, again, very self-critical. So I'll do it a take and I'll be like, no, I need to do it this way. I'm going to do it that way. And I always want to like tweak it. And I would say maybe either Precious or Danny, they're very just secure in their process. And they just do their lines. And then they're like, okay, cool. I did it. Like, no, like, questioning afterwards or whatever. Although I think Danny kind of, we would kind of be our support in that and be like, kind of like, did you think that was bad? Do you think this was bad? So I would say more Precious. Precious is very just like cool with it and very like seems quite secure with like the way that she does it, and she does a great job. So it's, I would love to get, I would love to be more like that and not come home every day and be like, crap, I should have done this or I should have done that, or, you know, and send myself into a panic attack. But I would say that. And but the rest of the girls are kind of like that too. Like Elliot and Hannah, they're very much like, okay, like I know what I did. I'm good. All good. Like moving on. And I'm like, wait, no, like maybe we can do this. Maybe that, but.
Yeah. Oh, I get it. I envy that mentality all too much right now. I am going to put up the spoiler warning at this point, so you can talk about everything that happens in season one and season two freely. So this is the one and only spoiler warning. You can push pause on this interview, and after you watch the second season of the show, you can come back and just push play and continue on. So spoiler warning is out there. You are free to talk about whatever you want. All right. So this next question is a little bit of a big one, but Bloom has a habit of making decisions in the heat of a moment that often put her at risk. And no matter how many times her friends tell her not to do that, she keeps doing it. So of the bunch of all those like big, wild in the moment decisions that she makes, is there any particular one that was most challenging for you as the person playing her to understand and I guess wrap your head around, where, you know, maybe it called for more workshopping or even talking it through with Brian and the writers?
I mean, I would definitely say when she kills Rosalyn. Like, I think that, I mean, yeah, that was interesting because I, you know, watching it back, it was quite like, it wasn't as explosive as Bloom usually would be in these kinds of moments. It was just more like a little look and then just like a, like, boom, dead. But that took some discussion of like, that was challenging because I was like, okay, you know, this is where her powers are at their max. And it's called, she calls it losing control, but is she really losing control? Like, and she admits later on, no, I knew what I was doing. And so that was kind of a weird personally thing for me to kind of figure out how to play, because I was like, I wanted there to be a bit of a difference between being like, I'm angry, like losing it, to now, you know, sometimes the most powerful people are the quietest. And I was like, what if this could be a new kind of moment for her, a shift? Because it is the first time she's like genuinely losing it. And yeah, watching it back, I was like, okay, interesting, because we did two different types. We did, again, I'm like, no, I want to try it this way. I want to try it that way. So we did do one where she did lose it. And then we also did one that's more, you know, quiet and just, she knew what she was doing and, you know, little look in the eyes, and then boom, this whole explosion happens. So it's always weird too, as an actor, to look back and to see which take they chose. So I would probably say that one, but they, you know, they chose the quieter one. So I was like, all right, cool.
Will say it caught me by surprise because it was different. And I feel like at that point in the show, especially at that point in the episode, as a cliffhanger for an episode, I mean, like, that was so incredibly effective, where after the credits hit, I was just like, holy shit, what happened?
Well, thanks. Cause I was like, I don't know if I made the right choice. Once again, I'm like, shit, should I have gone like more, like, should I have gone bigger? Yeah, it's, you know, they chose it. So I was like,
it works quite well. It was very effective in the moment. So here's another big question ish, but another part of the process of making a show that always fascinates me compared to making a film is that when you make a film, you go in knowing your character's full arc. But when you're making a TV show, there could like be major things about a character's past that you don't find out until your character needs it in the moment. So it was making me wonder, at what point were you told the truth of where Bloom came from so that it informed your performance when necessary, but not too soon?
Yeah. You know, you're completely right. And a lot of people don't know that, but it coming like as the episodes, the same way for the audience, it's the same thing for the actor. Like, I don't know what I'm acting about the next episode. Like, I don't know how to transition into this. So yeah, I found out, it was like a year ago now. So I'm like trying to like pick my brain and be like, what did happen? not on the show, but in the filming process. I think I sat down with Brian in the beginning and I was like, can you just give me an overview, like just an idea? And he gave me the overview. He didn't give me a lot of details. And basically told me, okay, in the first, like, however many episodes, Bloom is kind of, you know, she's struggling with the guilt of letting Rosalind out and kind of not trusting her now and kind of, you know, just found out this really big news about her past a little bit. And this is in the second season. And then he said the rest of the episode, well, and then in the middle, she starts to trust Rosalind. So then I was like, okay, so then we need a shift here. And then at the end, you know, after she kills her, now she's back to being like, I miss Miss Dowling. I'm kind of coming into my own. And, it was definitely, I mean, I don't know. It was interesting to kind of dissect and to figure out how to do, because again, we film out of order. So yeah, they're not shot chronologically. So it's kind of a difficult thing to navigate. And I had to learn pretty quickly how to do that. So I will like kind of create an outline before. And so I can like look at like, you know, what happened before it, like just like in it, like on a piece of paper with like little bullet notes, so I can on set be like, okay, this just happened, I can go into this. But again, some of the cast members don't even have to do that, and I'm so like in awe of how they just pull it off. Yeah, so that's kind of all that I got. So I didn't really know, I just kind of knew like the overview, and it got out because Danny is quite persistent and would go to Brian, our showrunner, like all the time and just be like, hey, Brian, and like sit in his office. And Brian would be like, hello again. What do you want? He'd be like, so tell me more. Tell me about the series. And he finally got it out of him. And Danny called me immediately and was like, this is what happens. Like, like Bloom finds this out and blah, blah, blah. So that was helpful. But yeah, you really don't get a ton of info. And I know season one, I didn't get really much at all. So it was quite, it's quite different than doing a film, because you have the beginning and the end and you can navigate how you want like each one to be. But yeah, for then also season two, or each scene to be, for season two, it was more, just hoping that it came across. And I did want to show kind of a growth in Bloom and a difference between, you know, her being really, you know, in this season, she's quite like, it's so sad. She's quite blue all the time, you know, because she's going through so much. So I had to incorporate that along with kind of, you know, towards the end, having a more of a bittersweet realization. And also in season two, I wanted her to be a little bit different than season one and a little bit more, you know, a little less explosive and erratic. And I wanted it to be kind of show like there's, you know, a shift in her and a growth in her as well. And with these new powers that she's like kind of honing in on. So to answer your question, I hope that answered it, but that was a big answer.
I think we got there. I'll end with this one. And it's, I guess, a very, very specific dialogue and reaction shot question that maybe I have overthought. But so at the very, very end of season two, Bloom seems pretty defeated when she walks through the portal at the end. But then we get some renewed hope in the reveal that her mother could be there. So what was it like for you on set figuring out what her expression should be as she discovers that? And then also the right way to say just like the single word mom. How much, you know, fear or curiosity or even excitement to have conveyed through that one word.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that was the interesting thing too, because it was, you know, it's a bittersweet moment. It's not like an exciting moment for her. She knows what she has to do. She knows she needs to do this and leave the person that she loves, leave the people behind who have been nothing but, you know, supportive and loving to her and her first, like, real friendships and stuff. So I definitely wanted it to be yeah, blue and bittersweet. And then almost I wanted it to answer your question, we did the mom line about like 50 times. I'm not kidding. It would be like, mom, mom, mom. And then we were like, I'm not even kidding. And it was like, which one should we do? So we definitely did it in a lot of different ways because once again, I'm like so indecisive and it was a weird line to do, especially ending the series with that. So I think they just chose the one that they thought was going to give the biggest cliffhanger. And but I kind of also wanted it to be a bit more like she's finally in this world and it's more of like a, almost a dream state for her of like, whoa, I feel like home or found in this. And then getting drawn towards that tower and just like almost knowing like what she's about to find. And then also being a little shocked by what she finds and curious and sad and happy and all of those things. So, but to answer your question, we did it like 50 times. So I don't really... I wish I could tell you like, oh yeah, no, I knew it was going to be this, but I really didn't. I was like, hopefully this sticks. And
I mean, it's tough when you have a single line that needs to convey so much and you could feel the weight of everything that you just rattled off there, which I think is totally necessary in a season ending beat like that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
I mean it. It was a very strong ending. I can't wait for more. I need to thank you so much for your time today. Huge congratulations on the Wink Saga season 2, but also everything you've accomplished. And I can't wait to see season 3 and everything else that's to come for you.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. You're amazing. And I love chatting with you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.